Hi, welcome to the 13th Warehouse. I'm Vicky.
And I'm Ken.
And this is Doug with the episode credits. Season 3, Episode 5, 3, 2, 1. Created by Brent Moat and Jane Espenson. Written by Bob Goodman. Executive Story Editor, Derek A. Hughes. And directed by Chris Fisher. Original air date, August 8th, 2011.
So, here's what's happening, and here's a clip from Season 5 in our Eureka podcast to explain. Moving forward, we're going to do the podcast in a different format. It was never my intention to recap the entire episode scene by scene. It just kind of evolved into that. We have to imagine, if you're listening to the podcast, that you've actually seen the episode, too.
Well, hopefully everybody that's listening to the podcast has actually seen the episode, or they would have no interest in the podcast.
So we don't feel the need to go scene by scene. We're just going to do a quick recap at the beginning to end, and then we're going to talk about the things we liked, the things we didn't like.
So we're pretty much going to talk about the stuff in the episode that interests us.
Right. So hopefully that works out better. That was a horrible speech.
I think it worked. I did. I think it worked. I don't think you should edit any of this.
Okay, just
play it as is.
The power's out and the banana cream pie goes bad.
I didn't eat the crust, just the healthy part. But you got to ride in the cherry picker.
So here's Kim with the artifact of the week.
Joshua's trumpet. When blown, the sonic vibration causes things in the path of the blast to disintegrate by disrupting them on a molecular level. Origin. The Israelites walked around Jericho while carrying the Ark of the Covenant for 7 days. On the seventh day, the priests blew trumpets of ram's horns and shouted, causing the walls of Jericho to suddenly collapse.
So here's the quick cap from Season 3, Episode 5, 3, 2, 1. Our old friend Doug Gramley will be here in future episodes to do the quick caps. Here's the quick cap for Season 3, Episode 5, 3, 2, 1. The warehouse receives the assistance of the holographic H.G. Wells when they investigate the disintegration of random people in Pittsburgh. The disintegrations and explosions are always preceded by an odd sound. Micah, who had read HG's files when HG first came to work at Warehouse 13, remembered a similar incident and suggests that HG may have some insight into just what artifact they may be looking for. The Regents and Artie agree with Micah's suggestion. Pete, however, is not on board and does not miss an opportunity to make his feelings known throughout the entire episode. We take a trip down memory lane to 1893 when HG was an agent in the 12th Warehouse. H.G. and Mr. Wolcott are investigating the latest disintegration. H.G. identifies the victim as Sir James Eddington, an astronomer that H.G. has been working on a special project with. She and Eddington were building a spacecraft, but still needed a certain power source. She and Wooly discover Vincent Crowley, H.G.'s lover, in the observatory. He is using Joshua's horn to activate the rocket in order to fire it and have it land in front of the Reichstag in Germany. He believes this will inspire awe and secure British dominance, which will in turn prevent the warehouse from moving to America. HG is able to shift the direction of the rocket and shoot it into space. Unfortunately, the ship comes down in Ohio in 1962 and disintegrates Doug Varley, who is out birdwatching. Warehouse agents Jack and Rebecca get involved when a couple witnesses the cow being blasted and disintegrated at the site of Doug Varley's disappearance. The horn destroys their car, and after the Tesla fails to stop the horn, Rebecca shoots it with a regular gun. Finding no evidence of the horn, Jack and Rebecca believed it had been destroyed. When Pete and Micah visit the site, they discover a book of short stories in the trunk. The book, not being the style of literature they imagined Jack would be interested in, together with the child's handwriting on the back cover, makes them assume that Doug Varley's son, Daniel, must have hidden in the trunk. They believe that Daniel has been in possession of the horn all of this time. We see Daniel Farley obsessively working on some sort of contraption and insisting to himself that this time they will hear him. Pete and Micah have to find him before he targets GL581 because it will also take out an entire baseball stadium. They locate Varley, and he does say at one point that he knows his father would not be coming back. He was trying to contact the shipbuilders. In the end, HG is the one who talks him down by telling him that yes, she built the rocket and failed at her responsibility to keep everyone safe. So what did you think about this episode?
I like the episode. Whenever they go back to that century and it's like a dark alley, all I could think about is Jack the Ripper, because that's what I thought it was going to be. Jack the Ripper has an artifact.
You know what?
An artifact or something like that.
I was convinced And maybe there is an episode with Jack the Ripper, but I was convinced that that's what this was going to be about.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if I'm remembering another episode or if I'm confusing it with Sanctuary, but I was convinced that this was going to be about Jack the Ripper.
If you think about it, if you look at certain sci-fi episodes or series, if it's in England and it's the Dark Alley, it's usually Jack the Ripper. Usually it's Jack the Ripper.
And I was convinced, totally convinced. And probably because of that movie, and we talked about that movie a long time ago with H.G. Wells, who came into the future to capture Jack the Ripper, who escaped into the future.
Right, yep.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know, maybe sometime down the road there is, but I was convinced there was an episode with Jack the Ripper.
Yeah, I thought so too, so yeah. You're not by yourself.
But you know, it was funny that Micah had the idea to bring H.G.
You're right, Micah. I do know what this is.
And Pete's upset, obviously. I just found it was really funny that Micah kept yelling at him that why didn't he trust her?
Right. But it seemed like something cut off.
What do you mean?
It seemed like there was a scene before that, and it just went to, you don't trust me.
Yeah, it went from Micah having the idea, she never says what it is, to Pete screaming at her.
There was something missing. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. There may have been a missing scene, or they may have just done it like that. But it's just funny that, you know, Micah's yelling at him, why doesn't he trust her? Well, why do you think he doesn't trust her? The last time HG came around, Micah quit the warehouse.
When Micah said trust, I thought she meant Pete don't trust her. I didn't think it was Wells.
She had the idea, and Pete didn't want to have anything with HG. It's almost like he was thinking that once she shows up, Micah's going to leave again. And Micah's telling him, why don't you trust me to be able to handle HG?
Yeah.
That's okay. What it seemed like to me.
Okay.
So during the HG part of it, and I wondered why she picked up and stared at her diary when she was changing in her room.
Oh.
I thought it was important at first. Everything she did at the crime scene, they kind of flashed, paused it. Did you notice that?
No.
When she took out her equipment, it like paused it. And then when she was taking the dust and putting it in the tube, they paused it. So I thought all these things she was doing were supposed to be important. But I didn't see where that was relevant anywhere else except for the diary. Because when she took it out of the drawer, I think they paused that for a second. So I was wondering why the diary was relevant. Apparently she had figured out that her boyfriend, whatever he was, Vincent.
Yeah, one of her many lovers.
Yes, was reading it. She knew he knew all about her project with, what's his name, Dr. Eddington, to build the spaceship.
Mm-hmm.
And then, after she got changed in her room,
mm-hmm.
she went into that secret room. Is that the same secret room from her first episode when Pete and Micah were on the tour of her house?
I want to say yes.
I thought so. Apparently Vincent wanted to shoot the rocket in front of the, and I don't know if I said this right in the overview or if I'm saying it right now, the Reichstag. Mm-hmm. I had to look up what the Reichstag was. Obviously it's German, but it's a historical building in Germany, which was built to house the Imperial Diet. The Imperial Diet is the parliament, I guess.
Oh, okay.
So that's where he wanted to drop the rocket.
I'm just still trying to figure out why couldn't a warehouse be somewhere else? All 12 over there?
No, there's not 12 other warehouses. There's only one warehouse at a time. So every time one warehouse moves or closes, there's another one to take its place. So this is the 13th.
Oh, okay.
Apparently, warehouses just have a lifespan. And they move. We knew Warehouse 2 caved in, but that doesn't mean it wouldn't have stayed there for a while. But that doesn't mean if it didn't cave in, it would be there forever. Warehouses move every once in a while. They live out their purpose and move, but they don't know when.
Oh, okay.
But I don't know that there's a specific time frame.
Because mm-hmm.
they always say, like, the warehouse is the living thing. Maybe it's the warehouse decides when it's time to move.
Oh, okay.
I'm not exactly sure.
I was thinking, like, Warehouse 2, what difference does it make if it just stayed? Why does it necessarily have to move? Because that one didn't necessarily move. It just kind of closed.
I don't know. I guess just to have all the artifacts in one place. That's my only thought.
It's a lot of artifacts.
Because remember, there's one character
caretaker. So it's almost like a whole living organism. There's one right. warehouse and one caretaker, and this caretaker's connected to the current warehouse and can't be connected to other ones.
Yeah, well, Miss Frederick that time, because she was still kind of connected.
Yeah, so that's the way I think it goes. But I don't know that there's a particular time frame for a warehouse. So Pete was, I understand, but he was just so horrible.
Yeah, Pete only had a few moments, but sometimes I just wanted to smack him upside his head.
Right, he was so mean.
I must have started drinking again, because the woman who tried to activate a super volcano with a giant fork is standing here, and you're all acting like it's a potluck. Oh, because your word means so much around here. Yeah, no ego there. Yeah, it's a shame Jinxie isn't here to see the freak show.
The blast resonates at a molecular level.
How far away can this horn be and still blast?
Pete, HG's dealt with it before. Don't act like she's not even here.
You just told me she isn't, which is fine by me. We don't need her. We can find this ourselves. Artie?
Let her help. I mean, she's the only one of us who's seen it.
Yeah, 100 years ago. She's not one of us.
Is HG coming with us?
Wait. So you trust her now?
Well, she has nothing to gain anymore.
Nothing to gain? She's in some woo-woo prison someplace. Quid pro quo, Clarice. First she wants the room with a view, next thing she's eating a guard's face.
You do know I can hear you.
Yes, just what the world needs, a rich homicidal maniac. Buy yourself a secret island lair and hire someone to twirl your mustache. Oh, that's right. You can't catch because you're in scary Regent prison where you belong.
Oh, that joke simply never gets old.
Ooh, one of my short stories is in there. The woman ruins everything.
I mean, not that she doesn't deserve it, but, you know, she's there to help. She can't do anything. She's a hologram, for God's sakes.
Right.
First, he's just horrible the whole time. But then he goes on this rampage at the barn about how this is all her fault. All these people died, and it's her fault.
You know what, lady? You are bad news. Whenever you show up, people die, people disappear. One way or another, everything turns to crap.
You can't seriously be blaming me for these deaths. I'm in prison.
Surprise, surprise. You're responsible.
If you look at it, she sacrificed her project back in 1893 to save humanity.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, just because the guy took it over and put the horn in it, she sacrificed it. She shot it into space.
Right, yep. Mm-hmm.
To save humanity. So it's not her fault.
People invent things, well, I don't say certain people, when they invent things, they do it for the common good.
Usually, yeah.
And then when you find out that somebody's trying to sabotage you, and at one point you want to destroy it because it falls into the wrong hand, it's not good for the world.
Right, and she sacrificed it. Yeah.
Right. Well, yeah. Pete's hard-headed sometimes.
Oh, my God. I know. He was just awful this whole time. And finally, Micah figures out what's going on with him and says, she's not leaving. She came back.
Pete, I'm back.
Look, Micah,
No, I came back.
It still doesn't change the fact that... Okay, I'm sorry.
Me too.
Because this was all about Micah leaving.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeesh. And then finally he chilled out a little bit. At the end, when she was the one who saved everybody, he did say, good job.
Yeah, he did.
Okay, let's talk about, you know, I have food issues. Like, I can't...
Oh, God.
I can't stand. I gag when I see disgusting food things. This kind of thing could cause me never to watch anything he's in again. This is what I mean. The second time I knew...
I want his fries.
Oh, my God. The second time I knew it was coming, so I fast-forwarded. The cheese on the Farnsworth. Oh, my God. That was revolting.
That was too funny. Even I was like, ew, I like hand-cut french fries.
Yeah.
I don't like all that cheese and stuff on it. But when he did that, I was like, oh, my God, that is so gross.
Yes. I think we were talking about this. I don't know if it was during an episode or after an episode, but this is the kind of thing. If I see something or hear something about a restaurant, that's it. Mm-hmm. You know, people with food all over their face, I can't take it. You know, people chewing with their mouth open or licking their fingers, I can't deal. I can't. And things like that will make me never watch a show again.
That was gross.
Oh, my God. And I know it's my issue, but it's so disgusting.
That was gross. I'm sorry. That was gross. You just, I mean,
Jesus.
It was so nasty. Oh, my goodness.
It was. It was totally disgusting.
And then, it went away steady. And I just kept on saying, come on, Pete, really? You could have went back over there and asked for some more cheese on that.
And wiped it off with a napkin instead of your tongue.
Yes. That was a Pete moment. That was gross.
Yes, it was. We're going to pause right here for a quick break. We'll be right back.
Hey, Dud Gramley here from Yeah, That Can't Be Good. If you're a fan of Warehouse 13, it is very likely you're also a fan of Eureka. And if you aren't, you should be. Please join Kim, Vicky, Skip, and myself over at Yeah, That Can't Be Good for an episode-by-episode podcast of all things Eureka. You can listen at EurekaRewatch.com on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. Moving on to Daniel. He seems to go in and out of reality.
Yeah.
Because first he thinks Pete and Micah are Jack and Rebecca. And he keeps saying he's looking for aliens. But then when they tell him that it's not aliens, he says, I know that he's looking for revenge. He was looking for the shipbuilder. But he seems to go in and out of reality.
I'm Rebecca. You got a name?
Daniel.
Are you one of the Mercury 7? You got a favorite?
John Glenn's from Ohio. He orbits in the Earth.
Is that what you want to do someday?
Are you going to fight the spaceman and get my dad back? Can I help?
Yes. I felt bad because I wouldn't say the first time when he spoke, he actually sounded like the kid. Like when he was a child.
Oh, okay.
Like the voice kind of changed. And I was like, was that him as a child?
Maybe.
And then it seemed like it changed back to him being an adult. So maybe when you're saying he was going in and out.
Yeah.
What was he, about 12 years old?
I forgot what they said.
But it seemed like he was going out of that age because the voice changed to me.
Maybe that was it. Because he did seem to be on both sides. Through the whole episode, we thought he was looking for the aliens. Then when he thought it was Jack and Rebecca, I was like, whoa, he really maybe is looking for aliens. When HG said, or Pete, or whoever said it, that it wasn't aliens, he said, I know, I'm looking for the shipbuilder.
But what I couldn't understand is why they convinced him that quick.
You know, I don't know. I'm sure in the real world, it might not have been that quick.
Daniel, I am responsible. Please, you have to listen to me. We've all lost loved ones unfairly. I lost someone I loved too. For me, it was my daughter. I was so angry. In such pain. I almost hurt a great many people. I didn't care. Just like you. But it won't make you feel any better. And it doesn't bring our loved ones back.
But I think maybe because she apologized.
But please, you have to help me now. This isn't the answer.
Why did you send it? Why did he have to die?
Oh, Daniel, it was an accident. A terrible accident. It was my job to keep the horn from hurting anyone, and I failed. And your father, and you paid for my failure. And for that, I'm so dreadfully sorry. But no one else needs to die now, do they?
She did say it was her responsibility to keep people safe. And she did try. I mean, how did she know it was going to come down out of the
right.
out of
well,
space?
Out of the lives of the many people that died, it kind of saved the majority of people. You kind of sacrificed a few for the greater good.
Yeah. But he was a sad figure.
Yeah, I felt bad for him.
But I was kind of confused because, like I said he knew that it wasn't aliens, but he was still looking for that star, that G581, I think it was, GL581.
Yeah, and that's the other thing, too. He was brilliant. Sometimes brilliant people go mad.
Yeah, I think most of it was about his father.
Yeah.
But the GL581, which is a star, like a sun, in another solar system, and I looked it up, that's what it is. And they called it the Goldilocks system because, like Micah said, the planets are not too hot and not too cold. Now, this part I don't know if it is true. They think it's possible that they could support life. So he seemed to be targeting that, even though he said he knew that he wasn't taken by aliens. See, that's where I'm a little confused. Does that mean he knows his father wasn't coming back and still believes in aliens?
You know what? That's a good one. I believe he knew his father wasn't coming back.
He was looking for revenge on the shipbuilders, so maybe he did think the shipbuilders were aliens. I didn't even think of that until just now.
Okay, well, that makes more sense that he thought, yeah, that the aliens were the ones that built the ship. So, yeah, that would make sense that he thought that the aliens were the ones that built it.
Right, and that's what I thought at the beginning, but it kind of confused me. I know, now I just destroyed the whole episode. Okay, now it makes more sense, I guess.
Yeah.
I guess it does. All right. But what I did find interesting is back in 1893, at the end, and they're sort of backing up the H.G. wants to destroy the world story.
Yes.
By showing us that she really did believe the future would be wondrous.
Mm-hmm.
Look to the future, Mr. Walcott. And I expect great things. Or the dawn of a new age. Would you rather it be greeted by the likes of us or men like Mr. Crowley?
I'd rather all slow down a bit. Catch our breath.
Oh, Wooly. Mark my words. The future is going to be a wondrous place.
I mean, it's good to know that because, like I said, when we did that episode, she had never really mentioned anything about that.
True.
And we thought it was coming out of left field. Now they're starting to add to that. So we do know that she was looking forward to a wondrous future, or she knew the future would be wondrous when she was talking to Wooly.
Yeah. Then to me, when she said that, it kind of, I don't know, like she got a glimpse of the future. To me, it seemed like she, at that particular point, when she had that little look in her eye, she looked like she knew part of the future. She had a glimpse.
And if she did get a glimpse, it probably was a very small glimpse because she was very disappointed when she did finally wake up in the future.
Right.
So whatever she might have seen must have been something wondrous, but she didn't see everything is what I imagine, right?
Right.
Yeah, she did have a look in her eye.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was wondering, and it could be a budget thing, but I wonder if there was a reason for Steve being out on personal leave.
I know, that was weird. Why bring him up at all then?
Well, that was the thing. The reason I was wondering, because they brought him up. So I'm wondering if HG doesn't meet him in this episode, she doesn't know who he is. So maybe if she runs into him in another episode, because I think it's safe to say we know she's probably going to come back because they keep bringing her back. Maybe she won't know who he is if she runs into him again in another episode.
Well, Artie act like he didn't want her, because like, even when they said something, Artie was just like, let's not even talk about that. She don't need to know
right.
Any of that.
Yeah.
Oh, is there a new recruit?
He's on personal leave and hands off.
Oh, I don't know if you've heard. Can't actually touch anything in my current holographic state.
I wonder if she's going to come back and it's going to have something to do with Steve and her not knowing he's a warehouse agent.
Right.
And then another reason why I think that she'll be back is because Claudia admits that she liked having her around.
I think they all do to a certain degree. Yeah. I even like when she comes up. But I still think there's something sinister behind her. She always has that look like, I'll be back look. I'm not done. I'm not finished look.
Jack, I do love you, but given the way things turn out for most warehouse agents, are we sure?
Hell, I'm sure. Charlie thinks that rocket was built by this nutty dame. Can't say I'll ever understand what was floating around in her head.
Nutty because she's a powerful woman ahead of her time?
Hey, I don't judge. Something she did landed her here.
Seems like every warehouse agent ends up loony, a bad guy, or on a slab.
You know, we've heard them say a few times before that, well, former warehouse agents are either dead or go crazy or become evil.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like it was mentioned a lot in this episode.
Yeah.
It just seems like there was a lot. I don't know what that means, but it just seems like there was a lot of mention of that.
Well, that's a big responsibility. Your life is in jeopardy. The people that you care about is in jeopardy. And then the world is almost in jeopardy. Yeah, I can see that at one point. Then I can see you going evil, trying to see it for your own good.
But the references to former agents, it just seemed like Jack and Rebecca talked about it a lot. I thought somebody else did too. It just seemed like there was a lot of references to former agents and what happens to them.
Right. Well, Ms. Frederick has said it. He has talked about it before.
Right. But it just seems like there was a lot in this episode alone. But you know what's funny? It made me laugh that Cow was in the same place when Douglas Varley got zapped when he was bird watching.
Oh, yeah.
And then when the two kids who were parking,
the cow was there.
That was the cow that got zapped. But it's like, why is this cow just standing there all by itself?
Well, they do what cows do. He was just chilling. That's all the cow was doing, was just chilling. Wasn't he on the billboard too? There's a picture of him on a billboard.
Yes, but it's this is one lone cow just standing in the same spot both times.
But cows kind of just do that, though.
I know, but I guess you'd expect to see more than one. I don't know. It was just funny to me. Like, what, this cow's still standing there?
I tell you, when it gets warmer, you go for a ride and you see some cows, watch, you'll find that one cow. He's just chewing and chewing his curd, and just like I'm just over here chilling. Don't bother me. When you come back 2 hours later, cow's still in the same spot. I ain't moving.
Just an observation. I thought it was funny that H.G. was wearing pants in 1893 and Rebecca in 1962, because that kind of wasn't the thing for either of those time periods.
Right.
And Rebecca looked like she was wearing a 70s pantsuit.
Yeah, it did. Like that polyester.
Yes. That's exactly what it looked like. Mm-hmm. And then I was thinking today when I was watching it. Remember in the first episode of the season, we said Pete's hair was different. I liked his hair. Mm-hmm. It looked different. And then the next episode, you said he looked different again.
Yeah.
It just occurred to me today, watching it, that in the first episode, he kind of had his hair pushed over to the side.
Mm-hmm.
It's up in the front, usually.
Yeah.
I think his hair was different in the first episode because they were trying to make the point that he wasn't himself. You know, he wasn't looking at women. He probably wasn't always using all his hair products. Because after that, it went back to him pushing it up in the front.
Yeah.
So I think that was the difference, because in the first episode, it was just over to the side, like combed down.
Right.
Like he didn't do anything to it. Because, you know, Pete must have his products.
Yeah.
It only took me, what, 6 episodes to figure out. They were trying to show us how he wasn't taking care of himself and he didn't care about anything.
Yeah.
So next week's episode, Kim and I both have off because we're going to once again throw in an edited version of a bonus episode we did for our Eureka podcast. So we'll be back the next week with episode 7, I think.
All right. See you then.
Let's go save the world, Latimer.
Whatever you say, sweetheart.
Okay, DC, tell us what's next.
Join us next time for season 3, episode 6. Don't hate the player. Bye now.
Bye.
Bye.
Hey, this is Doug Gramley reminding you to follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/the13thwarehouse. On Twitter at Eureka Warehouse. On Instagram at Eureka_warehouse. On our website at the13thwarehouse.com or on Podbean. Theme music for the 13th Warehouse, Reflections in the Mirror, provided by Esther Garcia under their standard license. See you next time in the 13th Warehouse.
And now we're also available on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.